bodies in this room. We are starting with our meeting. We are here to get an annual report from NAPFO. Before that, I'm going to request that we introduce ourselves, although we know each other. But let's do it. I'm Wendy McCarthy, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Education and Inclusion. I'm from the Northwest Province.
Good morning once more. Sipho Plaiki, I'm representing the interest of the Northwest Province in the Select Committee of Education.
Before you, Honorable Faba, you know that voice of Honorable Plaiki, it shows that he's the provincial chairperson of COPE now.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I hope they'll be coping after the election. Yes, my name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape Province on the Select Committee of Education. Thank you.
You must drink that.
Member Mnube from the ruling party. I'm coming from the Smart Province.
They're bragging about the provinces. What must I say? I'm in the province ruling by the Western, in the Western Cape, by the DA.
By the kingdom.
Yeah. And it will be the next kingdom after the KwaZulu-Natal. Maybe.
Maybe.
But my name is Michael Davila. That is just a joke. I'm not very serious about it. Yeah. I hope it is not recorded.
It is.
Is it? Okay. I will be back next term so they can
do something to me.
All right. My name is Michael Davila from the Western Cape. And I'm representing the Western Cape in the Select Committee of Education. And then, Honorable Chairperson, I must make an apology. Around about 11 o'clock, I must leave this meeting for the next Rules Committee at the Kudo Chamber. Thank you.
We all do.
I get a bomb to the studio. Give me so sir. Give me so like a kid, dear. Mugadu Hamushudi. Is a man from the same entity as the Sanka Tata of the state. Get the woman to the stoop.
Thank you.
Modern Ekamalam Tenguzukiso, Mamma Juanus to do it, Abu Shabila.
Shabila.
Ting Sukapola Pondo, La Sempuma Colon. Quindao, a trouble such as in the day. Then the annual north shall be boom and boom chat.
I'm not going to comment because I can't even hear some of
it.
I am now.
Honorable members, I'm going to be very strict of time because I know three of members here are serving in the Rules Committee. Mm-hmm. My one says, please can we work on just try to. Yeah, time is very important.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Zamayetwa. My surname is Sokaise. I'm the Chairperson of the Board of NSFAS.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honored members. My name is Msula Dagla. I'm the Executive Officer of NSFAS. We will later on be joined by the CFO of NSFAS, Lerato Nahe. I think he's still getting moved in the building.
Thank you. Can everybody in this room introduce? Let's make it quick.
Good morning. My name is Themba Mthethwa, a content advisor for the committee.
Good morning, honorable members and members from NSFAS. Linda Stofile is my name.
I'm going
good morning. I'm Michelle O'Connor from Media 24.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan from PMG.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Babulele from the Minister.
Good morning, honorable members and the Chairperson. I'm Noctula Nava from the Office of the Minister.
Good morning, Shereen Kassim from the Secretary.
Good morning, everybody. Marcel Williams, committee secretary.
Thank you. Let me give speech to members of NACOS just to give us a clue.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you to the honorable members of the select committee on education and recreation for inviting NSPAS to present the annual report of 2012-2013. Just before I start, Chairperson, I just want to say that if you're looking at the screen, there is a picture that we display there. It's not a new logo of NSPAS.
Right.
The logo of NSPAS remains the one right at the bottom. That one is a demonstration of our history for years, and the year under review is the one that we hit the 1 million student in funding at NSPAS. At a closer range, in that picture, if you look at it, you'll be able to see the numbers of different years. Thank you. But having said so, we are going to take you, Chairperson, through this annual report, and I'm going just to give some few words in summary in terms of what are we covering. I'm just going to talk about the board of NSPAS, and Msulwa Taka is the executive officer. I will get into the details of this annual report before we get your comments and questions with regard to this report. Chairperson, in terms of the NSPAS Act 56 of 1999, we reminded ourselves as the board of NSPAS about the 7 functions of this public entity. We felt that when we were looking at what we are doing at NSPAS, we need really to keep our mandate. Just to summarize, as it is there, all these functions are enshrined in the NSPAS Act 56 of 1999. What I want to emphasize is our role as NSPAS to allocate funds for loans and bursaries to eligible students. But I must also quick to say that it is also our responsibility to make sure that we're able to recover those loans. Having said so, our annual report is also going to speak to the issues of transformation at NSPAS, where we saw it in this year, in the year under review, that it was necessary for NSPAS to refocus and make sure that these functions are really followed practically. And we are going to elaborate further in terms of this report. I want to say that NSPAS has made the significant progress in the year under review to carry its mandate. Fortunately, where I'm sitting as the chairperson of the board of NSPAS, all board positions are filled and the committees are fully functioning. But besides that, I think the transformation program of a new student-centered model was initiated in the year under review. We developed a comprehensive policies for IT governance because our new program is more on IT, because we wanted to make sure that we can reach our client quicker than before. But we are doing this, and we prioritize compliance with legislation and regulation, including the NSFAS Act, the Public Finance Management Act of 1 of 1999, and the National Credit Act 34 of 2005. We felt that doing governance at NSFAS, as the board, we need to make sure that this organization is in line with the its own act and the acts of government. And we find it easier than just using our own intelligence, because we felt that this act are guiding us very well in dealing with the day-to-day governance issues and strategic issues of NSFAS. As the board, Chairperson, we appointed the executive managers. I remember before, when I was coming to this committee, at one stage I had no CEO. I had acting people, I had no CFO, but in the year under review, we managed to have appointed the executive officer of NSFAS, the one sitting next to me. As you would know, honorable members, Chairperson, we achieved an unqualified audit for third year in succession since embarking on turnaround. It's not that I'm bragging about unqualified audit. For the entity of this nature, we are striving for clean audits, because we're dealing with big money, a lot of money of the taxpayers, and it is very, very important to make sure that the entity delivers a clean audit. And to do that, that is why we're putting systems in place that will make sure that this organization is able to deliver. I said that all board positions in the year under review were filled. The board has 18 appointed and co-opted members. And as you would know that in the Act, the minister appoints 13 members, and as the board we can co-opt more than 4 members. Uh-huh. And the executive officer is also part of the board at NSFAS. So that's the number 18 that I'm talking about. As the board, we are a fully functioning board in the year under review. We've got various committees of the board, myself chairing the executive committee, that was able to have 11 meetings in the year under review. All the planned meetings continued. And then the finance committee, that was chaired by Ms. Kerti Menon, had all its 6 meetings in that year under review, as well as the Audit and Risk Committee, chaired by Mr. Stephen Smith, also had its 6 meetings that were planned for that year. The fact that the ICT committee had 2 meetings is not, it couldn't have its other meetings, because it was formed later during the year under review, and that is the reason why it had only 2 meetings. So as the Human Resource and Remuneration Committee was not in place at the same time with the other 3 committees. That's the reason why they had lesser meetings in that. With those words, Chairperson, honorable members, I'm going to hand over to the executive officer to give us more details in terms of this annual report. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, honourable members. I think I will take you through the operational detail of the year under review of NSFAS. Just at a high level, we use the 2012 academic year in conjunction with the 2012-13 financial year, and that's something that you should bear in mind whenever I talk about number of students assisted. I'm referring to the 2012 academic year, because there's a misalignment between the academic year and the financial year. Because the academic year ends in December, the financial year ends in March. But whenever we talk about the number of students, we're talking about the 2012 academic year. In 2012, we disbursed, disbursement increased from 5.9 billion from the previous year to 7.7 billion for the financial year, an increase of 1.8 billion from the previous year. And the number of students assisted during that year was 382,000, in line with increasing the funding from DHET and other government departments. This is an increase of 93,000 students over the total of 289,000 supported in the previous financial year. The NSFAS Act requires the entity to develop the criteria and conditions for granting loans and bursaries. That's what the chairperson has spoken about. And in 2012, we contributed to that mandate by laying the foundation for the transformation program. We procured a new loans and bursaries management system to replace the old TEFSA system that has been in use since 1991. And we have appointed as senior managers to make sure that the organization is able to run. The organization, when it was taken over by the new board and the new administration, started the turnaround strategy. And from the turnaround, we moved and said, look, let's transform the organization. Let's make sure that the organization can function better. That's just the breakdown of the numbers in this slide, Chairperson, that the number of university students that we funded in the year is 194,000, and FET college students is 188,000. There were also a small number of students that were funded in the agricultural colleges and the two NIHES, the National Institute of Education, one in Mpumalanga and one in the Northern Cape in Kimberley. The agricultural colleges are not defined as FET colleges, that's why we report on them separately, because they are still not under the Department of Higher Education and Training. Just moving on to the financial statements. Since inception, the scheme has provided funding of 32.8 billion rands in student financial aid, assisting more than 1 million students. And the NSFAS contribution to the goal of free education for students from poor and working class families is by providing full bursaries and converting loans and to bursaries to incentivize good academic performance. And you know, this slide we put it here because NSFAS started as a loan scheme, it is still referred to as a loan fund, but it's in fact a bursary fund more than a loan fund. If you look at the numbers, the final aid program, the 1 billion rand final aid program, there is a possibility that 100% of that final aid program can be converted into a bursary, because if students pass and qualify to graduate in their final year, the full amount is converted to a bursary. The FET college bursaries, the full 1.8 billion is full bursaries for FET college. Loans that are being issued, there's loans of roughly about 2.5 billion. 1 billion of it is the loan portion, because we convert 40% of that loan into a bursary whenever a student pass all their courses. And the only portion that remains as a loan is 60%, which equates to about 1.5 billion of that amount. And there's various other bursaries that we run for various other government departments. For instance, the Department of Basic Education, we run a bursary fund for basic education called Funza Lushaka, social workers, agriculture, military veterans. I'm not sure the military veteran was under the was in that year under review. Therefore, I think it's important to note that, you know, over the years, NSFAS has shifted more to be a bursary fund rather than a loan fund. We actually issue much more bursaries than loans. Just moving on the annual financial statements. In the year under the review, there was a glitch in terms of the annual financial statements. Our annual financial statements were not signed off on the 31st of July as expected. They were signed off 15 days later on the 15th of August. The delay was due to a decision by the Auditor General on the 30th of July to conduct an actual review on the loan book value What happened is, I think that's important because it resulted in a slight delay in the publication of the financial statement. What happened is, in the last few days of July, the Auditor General said they also want to do an actual review of the loan book to ensure that the value of the loan book that we reported in our figures is correct. And that took much longer than was anticipated. And therefore, we report on page 92 of the annual report the prior period error, therefore, because the loan book value was calculated incorrectly prior to 2012. The error was corrected after an actuarial review during the 2013 audit to the satisfaction of the Auditor General, which means that after the numbers were restated, the Auditor General was happy that the error has been picked up. And this is an error that comes in from about 2010 to 2011. Therefore, we have to not only restate the current financial year, we have to restate all the previous financial year and make sure that the Auditor General is satisfied. And in the end, we're able to get a sign-off from the auditors that the numbers that were reported were accurate. Just on a summary of the financial statements on the balance sheet of the statement of financial performance, the investments and bank is about 620 million prepayments. Those are the prepayments to the universities. These are the upfront payments, in fact, that we give to universities at the beginning of the year, so that universities can register students that come from poor families without demanding that they pay registration fees. We give universities in about January and February cash, so that they don't say these students who are coming from poor families don't have money. Because remember, the financial year starts only in April. We can only give them money from the fixed cash from April, but the universities register students from January. Therefore, we have to give them an advance January and February so that they can register those students that come from poor families. The loan book, the value of the loan book after the actual valuation is now sitting at 7.6 billion. And the value of the loan book, in fact, after before the valuation is actually 15.8 billion, and then after the valuation is 7.6 billion. And the reason there's a difference between those two numbers is a technical reason, because we give loans to students, and there's a whole lot of things that happen between giving the loans to students and recovering the loans to students. You know, some students might pass away, some may be disabled, and therefore write off the loans for disabled students, and some may not find employment. Because the next first loan is dependent on you finding an employment. If you are not employed, you are not required to repay the next first loan. Therefore, the actuary will come in and value the book and say, in as much as you have given loans to the value of 15.8 billion, we think that as actuaries, the amount that you will be able to recover is 7.6, because they would say the life expectancy of a South African is 65 years. And therefore, you expect that a certain population of these people that owe you money, some of them will pass away before they finish paying the loan. That's a technical calculation like that the actuaries perform on the book. And there's small other assets like plant and equipment and IT equipment. On the financial statement side, the expenditure side, operating expenses is about 58.4 million. There's salaries about 38.9 million. The transformation project, we spent 7.4 million. Audit fees, 8.9 million. Sorry, the justification there in the audit fees. The computer equipment is 2.8 million. Consulting fees is 4.2 million. Travel and subsistence 2.4. And printing. These are the major line items. We have been concentrating on the consulting fees line to try and reduce it. I think for the cost of the transformation, because we have appointed IT consultants for the transformation project, which means we'll still have a higher consulting fee base, and probably as we now roll out of the transformation in post this financial year, we'll see the decrease in the consulting fee base. One area that has also been a pain at NESFAS has been the irregular expenditure, and we thought that's important that we have a slide that shows some of the initiatives that have been taken to deal with the issue of irregular expenditure. I must say that, you know, in the 11-12 financial year, the irregular expenditure incurred by NESFAS was about 27 million. In the 12-13, it reduced to about 8 million. And now in the current financial year, which is 13-14, we've only seen 40,000 rand of irregular expenditure. As part of our audit improvement plan, NESFAS put in place the measures in place to reduce the transgression relating to supply chain. We have established a separate supply chain management office. We've appointed a senior manager for supply chain and SCM staff, and we've trained all staff on SCM compliance, because sometimes things don't start breaking down in SCM, they break down somewhere else in the organization by people not understanding the rules. We've introduced an automated procurement system, and that has helped us to be able to monitor compliance in a central place, because before we had a manual book that could not be monitored in a central place. And we've implemented a supplier rotation system, and we're conducting internal audit reviews every quarter to ensure that we're up to date. That's why we're able to know our status for 13-14 before even the final audit is concluded. The full benefit of these measures will be visible in the next audit period. On the annual performance side, just to the high level, the three high level strategic outcome oriented goals that NESFAS has put forward. One is to be an efficient and effective public entity in student financial aid administration. And there are four goal statements that support that goal. And we've, as a performance indicator, we've received an unqualified audit report annually for the last 3 years, as the chairperson has already reported. The second strategic outcome-oriented goal is to provide access and success in progression and to contribute to improving both throughput and pass rates. And the performance indicator, we've increased the total number of student loans and bursaries that have been awarded. As we indicated earlier, the number of student loans have increased from 289,000 in the previous year to 382,000 in the year under review. The third strategic outcome-oriented goal is to improve the student financial aid environment. The performance indicator is an augmented capital available for disbursement. This is the increase in the capital that has been disbursed to students from 5.9 billion to 7.7 billion, an increase of 1.7 billion from the previous year, which is 2011. The significance of the increases in NESFAS funding, I think we have indicated that at the end of the 2013 financial year, we disbursed about 32.8 billion. And at the end of this financial year, we expect that number to have exceeded 40 billion. And that's how significant the increases have over the last few years. Just in progress in 2013 financial year, the transformation project is now nearing completion. The new loan management system has been developed and implemented from October 2013. We've signed MOUs with government departments to share information to ensure that funding reaches intended beneficiaries. This is where we're trying to reduce the level of misrepresentation in the system. We've signed, we've got an MOU with the DBE to identify learners from a rural school, especially Quintal 1 and Quintal 2 schools. We've signed with Umalusi. We tested that system for the first time in January this year, where we obtained results directly from Umalusi database. It helps us also in terms of our fraud management initiatives to ensure that the results that we use are credible and they come from the source. Home Affairs, this is probably one of the biggest one of the most important agreements that we have in terms of verifying of ID data. As we're now moving to a centralized application system, it's important that whenever an ID number is being punched in our system, it gets verified immediately, and Home Affairs is able to tell us that this ID number is valid or an invalid ID number. Access to SASA, we've started social development to access the SASA database to confirm social grants recipients in all provinces. The benefit of this from a NESFAS perspective is about how do you make assessment of students easy. If we're saying this student has come through from birth till age 18 and they've been receiving a social grant, and we're thinking that as NESFAS is probably a wasted time to try and assess whether they qualify for NESFAS funding or not, because you know they've come through a social grant system, and one will be able to share with government all those sorts of information to make decisions sometimes automatically and say, this student was on social grant, went to a Kundal 1 school, we think that it's a waste of time to try and assess whether they come from poor family or not, because the information is in front of us, it's available. The new organization structure was approved by the board. It increased the headcount of the approved organogram from 156 employees to
299 employees, and this will be implemented incrementally as we implement the new model over the next 3 years. Additional operation budget is required to effectively administer and account for public funds of about 8.5 billion in the 13-14 financial year. The implementation plan of the new transformation project, I think we thought we should have this slide briefly just to brief the committee also on where we are with the implementation plan of the new transformation. The student-centered model is now being implemented. The loans and bursaries management system is operational. We started the pilot phase in 2014, 7 universities and 5 FET colleges, covering about 30% of university students and 10% of college students. And in total, we're covering about 20% of the population with the pilot phase. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson, I'm handing over to you and Lerato Enache has joined us. This is the CFO of NSFAS, because I'm having the CEO of NSFAS on the other side. You can see the team is in full at the top of the NSFAS. And I must say that we are so happy when we see the NCOP because of our transformation program. Our transformation program is talking to money follow students. And we know that those students are not only in the institutions of higher learning. That is why we have that memorandum of understanding with the Department of Basic Education, because we want to see these children right from school so that they know that they can get the best education, especially the poorest of the poor. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me take this opportunity maybe to start with Lerato. So to welcome you to this meeting, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Apologies for being late.
And let me take this opportunity to welcome Deputy Minister to our meeting. I think I must just apologize. I don't know really what happened, because apparently the first information indicated that the meeting is at V226. I'm like, from where I'm seated, to apologize on behalf of the whole committee. Honorable members, before that, DM, you wanted to say something before I give over to the members?
Well, thank you very much, Chair, and apologies for being late. Perhaps let's hear the members, and then I will come after the chair, the CEO, and the team have provided some of the responses.
Thank you, DM. And also, I wanted to say, but although we know that nobody can say he or she is not a politician, but when the chairperson started talking after the presentation, I said, now, he's looking like a real politician. I don't know what is the agenda, to want to clarify before we engage with the presentation. But it was on a lighter note. Honorable de Villiers, you wanted something to be said before I can allow members, because when it's, yeah. Maybe if you can just start with that one, because it was a worry, and I'm worried that we're going to leave this meeting.
Yeah, Chairperson, just a question. I heard what the Chairperson of the Board was saying to us in connection with the dates, the 31st of December and the 31st of March and so on. That I understand. But now, in giving us that information, there was just one worry. He's saying that the information on the paper that was from the CEO is in relation of the year 2012. Now there's a lapse between end of 2012 financial year and end of financial year 2013. And I picked up in your presentation that in July 2013 there was something wrong and you corrected it. Now my worry is actually, why not the information of the year 2012-2013? Maybe I'm a little bit confused. Can you just correct that? That is the reason why I went over to the chairperson just to ask that one. But from her side, I did get the indication that I must wait till the question time. Thank you.
Let me take it this way.
Alright, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, let me also, let me welcome the report from the NAFSAS team, and also just raise a comment that was raised by my Premier on Monday. And when I look at the surnames of the CEO and the board, the chairperson of the board, those are skills that we need in the Eastern Cape, and their surnames are related to Eastern Cape. So I thought they are coming from Eastern Cape, and Premier need those skills in Eastern Cape, and the skills are being wasted somewhere in Gauteng. No, it's our skills from Eastern Cape, maybe, as I'm looking at the surnames. Chairperson, my first question would be a general question that would come from anybody down on the ground. That is it's usually asked, why is it so difficult for the university to give students the NASFAS fund that is allocated to the university for the poor or students that don't have money? Why is it so difficult? Why does it make a chaos at the beginning of the year instead of the student being registered in the university because they qualify with their academic results? But when they get to the universities, the university do not give them the money, and there is nobody in the university that is coming from NASFAS or coming from the Department of Higher Education to clarify those issues immediately before the learners or the students go on streets to on strike. Because for me, I think it is necessary for a person from NASFAS or for a person from the Department of Higher Education to be part of those administration work that is done in the university to avoid all the chaos and those things that are happening. And I'm not sure about the allegations that we got from some of the universities from the students from university that says those monies are being taken by the universities as they come to the coffers of the university, taken by the university, invest those monies somewhere. That is why there is that chaos, that at the beginning of the year there would be no funds to give to the students for them to continue with a monitoring system here to the university. What is the strategy that you have for monitoring those monies from the university? That would be my only question, Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also appreciate the presentation from the Chair and the CEO. I've got about two questions or three questions, Chair. I'll be quick and go straight to those questions. One, Chair, I want to find out maybe from the Chairperson and the CEO that how many students in numbers, maybe if you quantify them, has their loans converted into full bursary for both the university and FET in the year under review. That would be my first question. I want to check on the on that number, maybe even if it's on percentage or in a row numbers, so that they must have a clear idea. And the second question is on the bank, on the loan bank book, the loan book. I'm not sure. I want to find out from you, if you do it, when and how do you write off the loans or the bursaries account of students, whom you said now you have been trying to get hold of them and you're not getting them. When are you writing off that debt? That will be my question. And the other question is on, I'm just asking it, Chair, because I have raised it in another meeting with NESFOS, the issue of top slicing. I remember very well, and there was a promise that they're going to deal with that problem. So I want to know, how far are you in addressing that problem of top slicing of bursary and of students? And along with that question, Chair, is the issue of registration. Some deserving students, because they do not have money to register, so they found themselves outside the university. Why is it that NESFAS is not actually not giving them, it's a full budget, paying the registration of students and taking care of other necessary expenditure that the student incur in the universities and FETs? Because some of the students, they said they could not register to university because they did not have money, even if they got what you call it a good performance or good results. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I need to have clarity. It says under the Board Chairperson's report, in terms of the NSFAS Act 56 of 1999, NSFAS is a public entity which has 7 functions. Right. Now it says, if I'm just saying, the first one is developing criteria, granting of loans and bursaries. The second one, it's also to raise funds. And then three, to allocate funds for loans and bursaries to eligible students, and then to recover loans. Now, I would like to know, of the 5.9 billion for the previous year, I understood that you said that it's more bursaries than loans, but I mean, if I looked at what the Act says, it's bursaries and loans. And I would like to know how much is loans, how much is bursaries, and how much did you as NSFAS actually recover of the loans? Because a lot of these students, obviously, when they finish, they have to pay back. Am I correct by saying that? Or a certain amount? I would like to know, I don't anywhere see in this report money coming back. I would like to see how much money has been coming back. I mean, we've been lending money out, and I need to know how much are we getting back from students that has finished. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Our Deputy Minister, and your interage. I'm just looking at the delegation here, Deputy Minister. In relation to the employment equities at senior level, as one of the gender activists, one would like to see women there at the sweeping and serving tea and at a higher echelon than they have only males. The employment equity is a mandate also, and you have just employed. That legislation has long been approved. It is a cause for concern. Maybe because it did not do a breakdown. You just told us that you have closed the acting positions and you didn't give us the picture. The other one, you said you are interacting or liaising with the, you have a memorandum of understanding with basic education. My question will be, it will be linking up with what Honorable Ranto said, to say, if you've been linking up with basic education, why does it become difficult when Vinky coming from quintal 1, 2, 3, because it was refused him, that it is difficult for me to register because I don't have money, because there's no one who monitors universities. Universities, they require registration fee first before a student can be admitted. In my constituency, we have UJ, which many students were turned back, and they started to do doi, and I don't know whether that thing ended up being corrected. So I also heard you only touching students from quintal 1, and basic education has used, I think past 2 years or past 3 years, they've fused in quintal 1, 2, 3, because the one is in line on that. There was no difference. Just a street will separate you, and find that also in that street, that other side, it's Jablandi location. The other side is the informal settlement, but the same people are not working. So why do you continue according only students? I mean, there's no quintal 1 now. It's 1, 2, 3 in one. So what it means then, to my own analysis, that a lot of students are being left out if you're still using that criteria. Also linked to the monitoring mechanism, what do you do with the universities that require registration upfront when they know that we have students that are coming from the poor and the working class? What do you do then if they violate that? The other thing that universities came up with this year was the question of them being reluctant to take students from the poor and the working class because they know that they're going to get that first, and because of their lessons to say you pay them late, so you were owing them in January, December, you owe them. Then they became reluctant in admitting the students. Now, going forward, what are your plans in mitigating that it does not recur next year, to say those students might loiter for 2 weeks, they don't know whether they're going to be taken or not? How long does it take you to remove a student from a loan book? We even have an organization that is called Unemployed Graduates. They've graduated having been loaned NASFAS. Then it's taken them more than 6 years unemployed. So how long does it take you to write them off? The students that are from Funda Lushaka, they become lucky because there is a scarcity of teachers now for maths and science. Maybe those are the people that get employed, and then you can be able to require the paying back. Employed, how many years completing? Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Honorable De Villiers.
Yeah,
do you have another question?
Chairperson, I'm actually worried about the time, but I've got 3 questions. Maybe I must put it.
Yeah, put your questions. You'll get the answers from us.
Thank you.
Yeah, well,
I pick up in the document, Honorable Chairperson, that some of the members of the board time of appointment ended in the document, the 2012-2013 document. What happened with those vacant posts of the board? Then in relation to, I was also looking for the breaking up of the allocation of funds. And I know the funds, they actually break it up in how many allocation was given to FET colleges and universities. But my information and understanding is also that these colleges and universities, they are actually situated in provinces. And I was looking for the allocation of NIS funds two universities and colleges in the provinces that break up. That is my second question. Allocation of funds to provinces where these colleges and universities are actually situated. That is the other question. I think I must stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mishodi. Are you okay?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, mine is just a general question. Maybe just to double check with the department to say, as members of Parliament, as we know, maybe now is the end of our term. In 3 months or 2 months, we're going to go home, maybe one not knowing that we're going to come back. For example, I just want to double check, as my son maybe is doing law, is the first time in the University of the Free State. I'm qualified to get this bursary of nurse. That is my question. Can I apply? Because I don't know if I will come back or not. So my son is doing law. That is my question.
Qualified next year.
Right now.
You're qualified next year.
Thank you, Honorable Mashoji. I just got two or three questions here. I think, Honorable Blackie, there's this question. I thought you would raise it today, but she was a little bit very doubtful. Chairperson and Deputy Minister, as you are aware that we are from provinces and we do oversight, I'm going to raise this question because Honorable Blackie on many occasions requested me to visit one of the accommodations where our students are staying. The conditions are very bad. As you are aware that we are aware that NAPSAS will cater for institution, accommodation and transport. One is more interested to know what are the arrangements or what are your monetary mechanisms, because you find this situation where maybe I've got a building, then I'll have that contract or whatever with the institution, but the conditions where the learners are staying, it's just unacceptable. There are many cases, there are many areas that we visited. Honorable Blackie, I thought he would ask that question, but let me, I do it because he brought that many times to my attention, that I want to know how do you ensure that learners are accommodated in proper accommodation, not what we are seeing on the ground level. My second question is around the issue, the enrollment. You know, when you take enrollment versus the funding, the two doesn't talk to one another. Every year there's an increase on the demand for funding and also an increase on the enrollment. But one doesn't really get, you know, a plan. How do you, you know, plan for this unforeseen situation, because it's happening every year. It's something that we can run away from it. We see it every year when schools open, every at the beginning of each academic year, where there will be a problem that we cannot accommodate or funding cannot accommodate all the learners. How do we deal with that? I understand that you talked about the memorandum of understanding between basic and education, but one doesn't really feel, you know, what is happening. How do you balance the two, the enrollment versus the funding? The other issue around funding, the screening, I want to put it as screening, because like I'm saying, we are doing oversight, we know what is happening. There's how sure are you with your system, you know, like your, what do you call this, test means, a means test, that as Wendy, I'm not going to use the particulars of my granny, you know, to qualify, because this is what is happening. We talk things that are happening on the ground, where you find a child that the parents can afford, but for her to access this NAPSAS, you'll go and apply using
the information of the granny, who is the pensioner, who is getting grants and all that. How do we close that gap? How do we close that gap? I'm going to, because Chairperson, I think one was taking everything from your annual report. If you take the remarks or the comments of the AGs, one is wondering how effective are these committees, because we've got the NAFSA's Board Finance Committee, you got the Audit and Risk Committee, you've got your Human Resource and Remuneration Committee, and the ICT Committee. But one is interested, how effective are they? Because the issues that the AG raised, it started from 2010 up to now, they are still raising those issues. How effective are these committees? Because my understanding is that if these committees were effective, we wouldn't be having this, you know, consistent concerns from the AG's report. Over to you, Chairperson and delegation.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure, Deputy Minister, whether you want to start or you come later.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think most of the questions are going to be shared between the Executive Officer and the CFO. But just to, without following any order, to clean up some of the questions, especially at the board level. You are right, Honorable Mube, the issue of equity. Maybe I just said without elaborating. But for the year under review, in our report, I think we didn't have everybody. But you can see there we had CIO. She is still there. That is an executive position. She is she. And she is still there.
She is she.
She is still there. So we are very much careful.
One out of five, because we are having an annual report here.
No, the COO position is still pending, Chairperson. Yeah. But I'm saying we are very, very, very much careful of the equity issue, including in those top positions. And it was just a start to say it, as it is reflected in the report. CFO, that is there, was acting, but now there is a full-time CFO that is sitting next to me. But the bottom line, Chairperson, I'm not contesting the numbers, but I'm saying the commitment is there in full. Secondly, Chairperson, I just also want to tick off the question which was asked by Honorable de Villiers, that what happened to the vacancies, because you can see that in the year under review, some members left. All the vacancies, the minister has filled all the vacancies. There are no vacancies in the board of NSFAS. So there is no vacancy that has not been filled. All the vacancies are filled up at the board. Because the only vacancies is a non-vacancy, so to say, because the Act says that the board can co-opt up to four members if there is a need. But what we have done, we have thus far co-opted two members. So those other two, they are weighing the need. Is that just co-option? But from the side of the minister and in terms of the Act, there is not a single vacancy in the board of NSFAS. Chairperson, the other question that you have raised yourself, the effectiveness of the board committees and given what is happening in the annual report. And I think you are correct, especially for the Audit and Risk Committee and the Finance Committee. They have been there. The other committees, as I indicated, they came later as we took shape as NSFAS. We are really, really doing our best as the board to make sure that we focus on our oversight. Yes, there are still a lot of challenges that are here in this annual report, but it doesn't mean that we are not interrogating those issues. And I fully agree with you that there are still challenges that we need to be stronger in terms of our monitoring and oversight as the board itself, not only on the side of management. So these committees are well coordinated and they are being refocused in terms of doing their work at NSFAS. But I'm going to allow the executive officer to take more of the questions and then we'll allocate some to the FO.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the question of the ministers and how do we ensure that there is no misrepresentation or fraud in the ministers, part of the transformation of NSFAS is about justice, because this is one of the areas where we've noted that the system was too reliant on affidavits. And affidavits, in as much as they are signed and are oath by students, but we've now come to realize that they mean very little, because there's misrepresentation there. And this is when the arrangements started with Home Affairs, because the first thing that was there was in a ID copies that were not really valid. And then we started with Home Affairs. And Home Affairs also said to us, with the younger generation of students, we will be able to give you more information, because when they get, when we issue the birth certificate, I'm not sure that they are abridged or they are not abridged now, you know, but when they issue the certificate, the birth certificate of a child is linked to the parent, which means if it's linked to a parent, we'll be able to tell, if for instance a child comes, a student comes and say, my parent is deceased, and we'll say, what was the ID number of your parent? We'll say, this was the ID number. And Home Affairs will just punch in and say, that person is actually alive and kicking. And therefore we'll go the other side, the SARS, and SARS says, actually this person is working for so-and-so, because that's the other access to information. And unfortunately, Chairperson, that process, we're running it as part of the transformation. It started with only the 7 investors this year. We're going to roll it further in 2015, and we're hoping that we'll have a full rollout in 2016. That's part of the... Because what was happening is, because universities were running this thing separately in different areas, they had no way of verifying the data that they were getting. But now we're centralizing it. We have now signed the MOU with Home Affairs. We're able to test that data and pull it to Home Affairs and be able to verify some of the information. And it's going to help not only from a NSFAS perspective, but from a Home Affairs perspective, because we want to start sharing information so that we can build a much more credible database as a country. And that will help us to weed out people who are not supposed to be beneficiaries of this system. The question of enrollment planning and funding is probably a much broader question that involves not only NSFAS, but involves also the Department of Higher Education and Training, the universities themselves. There is visibility of those numbers. I think the challenge in the system is there is a budget process on the other side. Even if you know that next year the student numbers will increase by 10 or 15%, the budget is only increasing by 6% on this side. Your hands are tied. You can raise the flag and say we'll have a bigger gap of unfunded students next year. But the budget constraints on this side say the funding for students can only increase by 6%. And this is something that the department with the treasury has to engage on, because it's a much broader question of how do you make sure that as the enrollment increases, we're able to provide funding for the increased enrollment. Accommodation is also one of the areas where the department is involved. I know even the Presidential Infrastructure Commission is involved in the issue of student accommodation to try and provide, especially for the historical disadvantaged campuses, because there's a problem there of the historical disadvantaged campuses of the existence. The accommodation that they have is not up to standard. And unfortunately, in the amount of money that is available from the budget is not enough to clear the backlog. There's a backlog there. That's why there is now an initiative that involves a bigger project with the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee, so that we can see whether there could be a big push in terms of building more residences. The department had published a report on accommodation, and there is a big shortage in terms of the number of beds, let alone the quality Because the biggest problem is the beds are not enough. And the second problem is the quality, that is, even those that are there don't meet the standards that have been set out by the department. And that's some of the challenges that exist in the accommodation space. And as NSFAS, we come in a bit late because we're trapped in the system, because we have to ensure that students get accommodation, and we would love them to get quality accommodation. But in some instances and in some campuses, it's just not available. The provincial breakdown of allocations, we can provide that, especially for FET colleges. It's much easier to provide the breakdown. It's much more trickier for universities because of the nature. Some of the universities have got campuses across provincial boundaries, and it's something that we just need to see how we can get it right. Because we don't analyze at a student level, we analyze it at a university level. But for colleges, it's very easy. We can be able to provide the allocation for each college, for colleges per province. But from a university perspective, there's much more analysis that we probably need to do. But some universities straddle the provincial boundary. The question about the first question that was asked by the honourable member was left about the financial year and the academic year. And this is probably linked to the registration problem. I will try and answer the two together because they are linked together. Because the academic year starts in January and ends in December, and the financial year starts in April and ends in March, we have to count, when we count the number of students assisted, because the money for 2012-13, for instance, assists students to study in 2012 academic year. That's why we relate the two. The money that we'll get now in the new budget in 14-15 will assist students to study in 2014. That's how we link those two, the academic year and the financial year. But where the problem arises is now at the beginning of the year, in January, February, because the expectation is would have paid all of the money for universities after December last year. But students would come in January, February, and we don't have money as yet for the new year, because money would only start flowing in April when the new financial year starts. Therefore, some students go to universities and they are told that they need to pay registration fees. What we have done is, as far as we use the recovery's money, and I'm going to link the recovery to this question also, because I think this question links up a few of the questions. We use the recovery's money that is in our own coffers to advance to the universities, because we also don't have money from the fiscal at that point. We take money from recoveries, we advance to the universities and say, here's the money, use this money to pay food, accommodation, and all the things that students need who come from poor families who can't even afford the registration fees. And some universities say, we also need to take a portion of our own registration, because universities' own cash flow is under pressure. And then we give them up to 30% of their allocation as an advance in around January, February, when they apply. And then the reason that we put the application is some universities don't really have a problem. You know, UCT will tell you, look, we're fine. You know, we can wait the 2 months. We don't really have an issue. We'll register the student. But some universities have a problem. They need the cash for advance. And we give them, we spend about 600 million rand a year on that cash advance. The question of recovery, I'll also ask the CFO to assist me on the question of recovery, how much we recover. And we put recoveries back. But I think it's important to link it to actually the amount of loans that we issue. Out of the 7.7 billion, I think, you know, I was looking in the financial statements, using the numbers that are much more credible. In the financial statements on page 96, there's a table at the bottom of page 96, that out of the new loans, we out of all the money that we issued in that year, the new loans amounted to about 2.5 million. And the social benefit component of those loans, which means the conversion of those loans to bursaries, is another 1.3 billion because of the students that are passing and they get some of their loans converted. And that also answers the question as to how much of or how many students get their loans converted to bursaries. Out of loans of 2.5 billion that were issued, 1.3 billion was converted to bursaries because students had performed. the issue of quintile schools, I think this is also because of the age of this report, because when we're still dealing with this issue in that year, we're still dealing with quintile 1, quintile 2, and quintile 3. We have now moved with DBE and talking about
fee-paying and non-fee-paying schools. Our latest terminology no longer talks about quintile schools. I think it's just a matter of the age of this report that we're dealing with. The monitoring mechanism, and this is probably where I should take in the members on some of the disruptions that we had at the beginning of the year. And part of the flaw in this system is run independently by universities. Of course, we give them guidelines in terms of how they run the system. And that was the reason why the transformation program was adopted, to try and centralize key parts of the system so that it can be centrally monitored. Unfortunately, where we sit, we're in a transition phase. We've done few universities, we'll add another university next year and complete it in 2016. And as long as we're still in this transition phase, there will be that group of universities that are not being monitored closely by NSFAS. And there was an issue that was raised that NSFAS owes universities money, that, you know, UJ, I think it was the UJ example, that owes universities money. And I think that is linked to how this the system of financial years and academic years work. NSFAS pays from April to March. It pays universities from April to March, which means when you come in January of the new academic year, NSFAS is still in the old financial year, and we're still paying money from this old financial year. We've spoken to the department to try and bring in the cash flow upfront so that we can be able to pay much quicker the universities. But the second part of that problem is universities actually overclaimed. We give a university 100 million rands worth of allocation. And what they went and did, they signed up students up to 110 million rand. And where is the 10 million rand going to come from? From nowhere. Because it's not in our bank account, it's not in their bank account, but they've given loan agreements to students for an additional 10 million rand. And that's one of the things that actually destabilized the system now in January. Because when those students came in January and say, look, why is my fees not paid? The university told them a story that, no, NSFAS has not yet paid. And NSFAS was not going to pay because NSFAS does not have the 10 million. NSFAS has told them that we have 100 million, and they went on and signed students up to 110 million. And therefore, that's how this, that's the straw that broke the camel's back now in January and February. But subsequent to that, I don't leave the story here. Subsequent to that, you know, the department intervened, provided additional funding to NSFAS, and were able to pay those 10 million rands that were not in anyone's bank account. And that's probably some part of the reason that the country is now much more stable now than it was about 4 weeks ago. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Sulo.
I'll answer a couple of questions related to finance, and I'll just go with them as I get them, not in a particular order. I will start with the amount we've recovered for 2011-2012. It was 135 million. That was our recoveries. And also there was a question that was asked around how do we write off the debt relating to the loan book valuation. I'll just explain it in this way. So at the end of every fiscal year, the actuaries would come in, would look at your loan book, and then they'll make a provision for impairment. So they would look at the initial loans, the transitions from the old loans to the new loans, and they would look at percentage of students who are paying their new loans. And as it happens, you find that new loans or old loans, new loans are being paid much faster than the older loans. They will try and project that over a number of periods, and they are dealing with students who've already left the institution. And as the executive office has already explained, the loan valuation book or the loan nominal amount that you see there, it already has the credits from the universities, meaning that the amount that come through and we reduce the loan value at the end of the fiscal. It also has the conversion of the 60-40, meaning that 40% of the loan amount is being converted into bursary, and it also has the 100% conversion from students who've made it through on final year. So they set an impairment figure based on that. And also, it also takes into account that we can only charge interest only 12 months after the student has left the academic or the universities or the, yes, the universities in this instance. And when it comes to actual write-off, when we actually write off the student, we look at the disability, so we will ask the student to give us the medical aid that declares that the student has indeed he or she is disabled, or the death certificate from the Home Affairs. That is the actual write-off. So the money that is being set as an impairment, it means that we are still able to recover that money. So we don't sit and say a certain amount of money has been impaired, we're not going to recover. The actual amount that we do not recover or we do not put any resources in terms of recovering is the one that are related to disabilities and death. With regards to recovery, so I've mentioned a figure of just 135 million. So I think the members would want to know what is it that NSFAS is doing to make sure that we recover more. So we've struck a partnership with National Treasury where they've provided us with some of the suppliers who have given us access to the government database. That's number one, where we look at any employee who earns 30,000 upwards, because that's when we will start trying to recover. If we earn less than 30,000, we won't recover any money. So we look at those employees, we talk to the employers, and they start putting through the deductions in person. And then number two is that we had established a call center where we, based on the data that we have from our consultants, we call all the ex-NSFAS students to try and recover the money from them. And then we've got other alternatives relating to the private sector with the institutions of investment and savings, where we present to the insurance companies and ask them to look at the employees who are not in the public sector, but they're just in the private sector, to try and recover the funds that are owed to NSFAS. And then with regards to the issue of monitoring system around the distribution of funds, the executive officer touched on it, but what we've done further as well is to get our internal auditors to perform some forensic work on other universities of technologies or FET colleges, and the results that come up, we discuss them with the board and with the Department of Higher Education and Training. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me start with me. Let me take the opportunity that I'm sharing the Chairperson, I think I'm still going to talk to the issue of accommodation. As this select committee, we are aware of the concerns. The report was presented to this select committee. We are aware of what is happening when we come to the issue of accommodation. But what we are interested in, what are the interim measures? Because the fact of the matter is that learners, students are accommodated somewhere, but the conditions are not consistent. What are you doing? You know, it hurts and it's very painful that you are saying that you are assisting this child because he's from a poor family, but you subject, on the other hand, you subject the very same child to that condition. I think what would be important is that I'm going to invite you, Chairperson, to my province so that you must go and see what is happening on the ground. Because honestly, here we're speaking two different languages. Maybe it's because we are from the provinces, we are from the ground, we know what is happening on the ground. We are not just in offices and don't see what is happening. And that is why I want to know what are the interim measures. Because I would expect where NSFAS or department would say, for you, Wendy, because you've got a building and you want to rent it out, this is what we expect. At least that standard. But there is no standard. You know, people are taking advantage of our children. If you can go there, I don't think you really, you know, like what you are going to see. But definitely, Deputy Minister, I'm going to invite one of the officials here to go down and see what we're talking about. Honorable
Thanks, Chairperson. Just on the note that you have said, now you reminded me of something, that all these places where these students are living, it looks like those places are not monitored. Everybody who wants to make a living out of the students, he or she will do that without knowing that there is nobody who will monitor how these funds are being used. On radio yesterday, I was listening to a gentleman who was praising himself from Port Elizabeth. He's got a place for students. He calls that place it's a Ladlin. And he's doing all this competition for the children, and if they win 2,500, they will be having Ilendo also, this thing, Galadina and whatever, and whatever. And nobody is taking care of those students. Money is just dispensed to the ground, and nobody is monitoring what is happening. Chair, also, man, the CFO has just, on his last statement, talked about a private sector that will be called in to help in, I'm not sure did I hear him right when he said, will help to recover the money from, did I hear it right, to recover money from the students that have taken loans and not repaid the loan. It means that will take more money from the coffers of NSFAS for those private sectors to do the job. That's my observation. You are here to answer me, because I'm thinking now, if there is a private, there are no staff members or anybody, or people within NSFAS that can do that job. It needs to be done by a private person or a private sector. It means going more into the coffers of the organization. So and give money that could have been used for some other things that are necessary for the students in the university. You can correct me on that, CFO. The other thing, Chairperson, the organization has set themselves targets. In the report, 13 out of 17 are not met. It's only 4 targets that are met. What plans do you have to meet those targets? Because the targets are set by you, by seeing that you've got all of the correct people in place, and those things will be done. But 13 of them are not done out of 17 targets that you have set. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
Oh, Chairperson, there's one thing that I'm not in the monitoring system of the organization. The students in the University of Walter Sisulu in Mthatha, every day if you go to Mthatha, Honorable Deputy Minister, they are in front of SPA in Mthatha. When any person comes in the SPA shop, they give that woman or whoever the card to buy things inside the shop and give her or him the cash. That money is also not monitored. They're doing anything that they want with the money. What are the plans to combat that? Because it's not happening also only at Walter Sisulu. I've heard it happening in the other universities also. What plans do you have to combat that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. thank you very much, Chair. Let me
see. Xbox.
Yeah, okay. Chair, I must say I'm not that I am not quite happy about the response on the question that I asked on convention of loans. But I would like, because you see, I've got a reason why I wanted to ask that question. I want to know from the FET and to the university, how many, or whether percentage, because if you say to me in convention is 1.3 billion, we're not sure whether this in this, you give me the full amount of conversion in terms of money, but I'm not sure in terms of the beneficiaries, in terms of the learners, how many in the university actually benefit from this convention. You'll find out that the convention is only meant for the university students. Students from the FET will never actually get the convention. I wanted to check that distinctions, if it's there in terms of quantifying it in percentage change, all numbers. And the other point that I could not emphasize it more is what the chair has said about the accommodation of students. I don't want to go into details about it. The chair presented exactly what I said to her, and which is the pride of the learners. In the middle of 2003, chair, I must state it here, one learner died. He was raped and killed. He was from Khamutlatla village near Lichtenberg. It's because of the vulnerability of learners in the student accommodation. Some they've been crammed in one house there, Kohakapu, and they're vulnerable. They go around midnight. There's a lot of people getting there. There's no security. So I said to Chair, this thing is dangerous. It needs an attention. So I'm just stating it and say Chair is right raising it because I just forgot to say it because I've said it so many times to her. No, I wanted to emphasize on that. On the last one, Chair, it's on the debt collection method. Whether maybe if you have a debt collection company, in percentage, how much does the debt collection company ask as a fee for you to to recover the money? But what we want to check, Chair, is that we must not lose the entire portion that should have been collected and put in good use and now get into wrong hands. As symphony by this debt collection companies. I thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As one of my previous colleagues also asked, like if we had to get debt collected, then we have to pay other people as well. The question why I'm asking is I'm already seeing on the expenditure that there's consulting fees of 4.2 million, only on consulting fees. Then I look at salaries and operational expenses, which is like 38.9 million and 58.4 million. Now this is supposedly to be for staff in any case that should do work at the end of the day. My problem then comes in at the recovery of these loans. And we just heard that 135 million was recovered. Now, percentage-wise, I would like to know, I am not a chartered accountant, but when I sit here, I want to know if 135 million was recovered, I would like to know what the percentage of this recovery is. And I can tell you, if I just look at the amount that was loaned out, it is a very slim percentage that's actually been coming back. And to me, I need to know, someone has to have control measures. And what control measures do you have? Because from what I see, there is no control measures. Otherwise, you would get more money in, and you're not getting it in. And I'm quite worried about this, because it's already going up from 5.9 million to 7.7 billion. So next year, some of us will be sitting here again, and we will hear that there's even more away and more away. Eventually, the loans which is stated on the first page, which says that to recover loans, it's part of the act and part of the seven functions to recover this. And we're paying salaries of 38.9 million. I need to know how much more do we have to pay to get loans back, and how are you going to combat that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable
Member. Without risking to be called a slow adapt, not learner, I have asked, I didn't get it, to say you give universities and or you give provinces who issue out to universities and as well. And universities don't register learners who are coming from low fee paying. Yes, they want manifest before they could tell the student whether you qualify or not, before they do an assessment. My take is that the minister, when he started 2009, he has been drilling this thing that universities should not charge registration. Now, your interaction with DPE, you are supposed to be knowing exactly that these applicants are coming from Northy paying. So they do qualify pending their results, not to be charged a registration fee. What is your monitoring mechanism? Because it has happened, it's going to be happening also in 2015. And the minister has been drilling it from 2009. I'm not sure whether it is still there in the amended, in the transformed criteria. Universities used to withhold gas fast money because they allege that students are going to be exposed to a series of burglaries. So they don't want to use this one until a student gets, maybe in June, the students couldn't get those ones that the administrators thought the students are going to get. So, from your side, do you monitor in terms of, like, those students in my position, that UJ, Spread, they were charged back. Nobody goes back to say, hey, you do qualify, we've resolved the issue of the universities admitting you because you have paid that 10 point something of million. Mm-hmm. Because they were resisting to say, you don't pay them, or you pay them late. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Mube. I think also Chairperson in delegation when we respond to the issue of the using of consultants. How do you, because if you use consultants, we expect that there should be skills transfer so that you, in future, you phase out using of the consultants. Can you also talk to that?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not going to overemphasize the issue of accommodation as you raise it. We are allocating money, full course of study, to a student, and we cover food, transport, tuition, accommodation, and books. Accommodation is part of what we cover as NSFAS. In our transformation model, where we say money follows students, we are focusing on these five items that I've listed, including accommodation. However, we fully agree with what you are talking about. Even the minister at one stage, not only in the Northwest, even here in the Western Cape, also see a situation where NSFAS funded students sharing a small room, five students sharing a small room, horrible situation in terms of accommodation. But I think the Deputy Minister is going to elaborate further on this issue of the accommodation. We've spoke about it and I'm not going to take it further. But what I can say is that is the major listed item, even in terms of the transformation that we're talking about. Now, Chairperson, this takes me to the monitoring question that Honorable Mube is referring to. Our transformation is being piloted this year to 7 universities and 5 FET colleges. And in that pilot, in those institutions, students are applying online. And they are applying directly to NSFAS in terms of NSFAS funding. So even before even before the university knows, we know who has applied where in terms of this pilot that we're talking about. So it's not going to take us longer
I think we have indicated in our annual report going forward 2015, 2016, when we roll out this pilot. Because that is where we need to get into details in terms of the money for the students. I want to agree with the members of the committee at the moment, especially the year under review, we have a challenge where we have 25 universities in this country and they are doing the registration system in 25 different systems. We have 50 FET colleges and they have got different ways of doing these things in 50 ways of doing it. But what we are doing with our transformation, we want to do these things in one way. And therefore, that is why we have this student-centered model in terms of NSFAS that is being piloted and that is going to be rolled out very soon. So I think that is a plan to deal with the question that you are challenging us on in terms of our monitoring and what do we do, because this is the situation that is taking place. One part of your question, Honorable Fiver, I think when we talk about FET colleges, we have no loans at FET colleges. We've got full bursaries there. So there is not a conversion at the FET colleges. So the loans, the product of loans is only at the universities. So that is where you'll find that. So all FET colleges, they've got full bursaries. So I think the executive officer is going to elaborate further with other questions.
Thank you. Let me delude the question on cost of NSFAS. And it's a question that we need to put it in context. NSFAS in the year under review disbursed about 7.7 billion. And in our benchmark exercise with the state institutions that are in this base of disbursement, the cost of disbursement is about 5%. In SASA, it's one of them. NSFAS operated at 1.2% at the cost of disbursement. And therefore, you know, the cost base of NSFAS is very low. It's actually probably one of the lowest in government. And part of the reason that we need to beef up, you know, we need to build a collections unit at NSFAS because it did not exist before. NSFAS used to collect via an illegal garnishee, which was now corrected through the repeal of Section 23 of the NSFAS Act. When that section was repealed, then NSFAS did not pursue that option. And therefore, because they had that easy option of collecting, there was no need to build a collections function at NSFAS. And this is now what Lerato was talking about. We're starting to build that base, and we're starting to sign up various agreements with people. Consulting fees is something that we're looking at. It's still high at 4.2%. And we want to make sure that when those consultants leave, they leave the skills in-house. I think it's fair, I also say to the members of the committee, that in this current year, we have employed no less than 40 of our own people, because we've got now a new approved organogram that increased the organizational structure from 166 to 299. And we're gradually increasing the number of our own staff that are able to do the work. That's the question. And on the Walter Sisulu question, this is something that is, you know, that has been bothering us, because in as much as we're implementing the transformation, you know, and we're gonna implement the cell phone voucher based payment system, you know, the SPACs. We realize that, you know, even with SPACs, it doesn't necessarily mean that a student would not stand outside the SPAC and say, "You can take my voucher and use it." You know, this is part of the societal issues, and I think from where we sit, we're trying to deal with the bigger problem, and then we'll have the residual problems of those few students that don't want to use their books money for books, and they would rather use it for something else. And that's a challenge that we'll have to continuously deal with it, because the implementation, and then probably the biggest problem is not those students that stand there. The biggest problem in the current system is students that just get given 30,000 rand in their back pocket by some universities, and they go away and blow it the way they want it. That's probably where the biggest problem is. Those are, you know, that's the smaller part of the, it is still a problem, but it's a smaller part of our problem in terms of how we control this money that is entrusted to us. The chairperson has dealt with accommodation, and the conversion, in fact, I thought you have dealt with it, because the FET College is the FET College. There's no loans, and we can give you the actual number in terms of the university students that qualify for conversion. And they would qualify for a sliding scale in terms of some. For instance, there would be a student that pass all their courses, some would pass 4 out of 5. They qualify, you know, based on the number of courses that they've passed, and the percentage is determined by their performance. No, the question of consultants, I think consultants helped about 4.2 million during the year under the review. And it's something that we from a management perspective we're monitoring. It was part of, you know, assisting us when we're very depleted in terms of resources and our own people. We have employed our own people, that number is reducing. There is still a residual amount in terms of the consultant fees that we still pay. And we think, relatively speaking, if you compare it to the cost base and that's what's trying to manage, it's actually still a very low number in terms of what we're spending on consultants. I think part of the bigger cost in terms of the consultants is what we're paying for the transformation project. And that's a once-off cost. And in the year under the review, it was 17.4 million that we're paying for the implementation. And that's the IT consultants that we're building, all the IT systems that enable us to accept online application, access those applications online and approve the application. And it's going to help us, you know, to bring more governance into the system, because the problem with governance, you need the information first to be able to govern things that are wrong. Because the information, as the chairperson has said, was sitting in 75 different places. We could not govern properly because that information is controlled by the university. They will supply you what they want to supply. For instance, if you ask them how many students have dropped out, they will tell you what they want to tell you, because they know that if they don't tell you, it means they will get the fee for the full year. The question about students that are from no fee paying schools are being able to register automatically, that's the benefit that will rip with the transformation project. Unfortunately, with the dispersed system, you know, we can tell as much as we can to the investors that we're offering you money, register students from poor families without asking them to pay. And we're still getting reports that some investors are still turning back students who have been assessed that they've got a zero expected family contribution, but they still want them to pay. And from where I sit, I communicate with the vice chancellor, then we tell them some of these problems. And to my surprise, in some stage, that some vice chancellors claim that they don't know that this is what has happened in their own university, and that's something that we have to continuously deal with them. But it's a problem that is at its tail end, because the system of financial aid, we're taking it over. We're going to monitor it with a uniform system across all universities. We'll be able to know what has happened in each of the various universities and various FET colleges. There's a question also, Chair, about targets not met during the year in question. And there was a significant number of targets that were not met. And this was one of the year when we had to do it, where to take an introspection as necessary and ensure that, you know, going forward we're able to meet those targets. I think the difficulty in terms of how we've set our own targets, I think we're to blame in this one, because we set targets during the time that our own system was shifting because of the transformation project, and therefore our resources were spending them to ensure that we're able to change the whole system. But our targets, we're still talking to the old system, and we take responsibility for that. We're not going to blame the Auditor General. The Auditor General was right by saying you set the targets and you did not meet the target.
Can I come in, Chair? Well, thank you very much, Chair, and honorable members. Chairperson of NASFAS and the team. Well, Chair, we did encounter a number of challenges during this academic year, and I think it's largely attributed to the fact that the demand increased exponentially in this academic year. And I'm happy that we are now at this point where we've been able to really resolve some of the things that had to be settled. And it is true that there have been allegations of maladministration leveled against some of the universities in terms of dispensing the loans. And I think as a department, I know, for instance, in one FET college where about 16 million was allocated, and they took a large chunk to salaries. And we did act because that FET college was put under administration. So we have been acting where we possibly could to try and address these anomalies. But I think this short to medium term plans, reflected on in the report, we will really help deal with some of these challenges. We are hopeful that at least post 2016 we'll not be sitting with these problems, because centralizing, I mean having a centralized system, I think will help eliminate all these issues that honorable members were raising. Chair, so far as student accommodation is concerned, a couple of years ago, the minister appointed a ministerial task team led by Professor Aaron Rensburg. And there is now a report to that effect. I think you are referring to the report earlier. Now, I think what we have not been able to do successfully as a department is to put monitoring mechanisms in ensuring that the universities actually adhere to the recommendations of that particular report. So I really hope that in the next administration, the leadership, the political leadership, will prioritize this area. Because we are aware of the conditions in our student residencies, we have impressed upon universities to actually implement the recommendations of the report, because they were consulted and they made contributions in the final analysis of the report. So we are really concerned if they are not adhering to some of the things that they had contributed towards. We are committed to ensuring that our residences are decent, safe, they are academically conducive student residences for our young people to perform to their best. So I think, Chair, we must apologize as a department. This has been a complaint, but I think we need to. Because some things have to be enforced. We need to come closer to the space. I know I've been visiting a number of universities, but I've never really taken interest, for instance, in visiting some of the residences. And I think it must be part of what the next administration prioritizes, so that we ensure that we enforce, we ensure that we impress upon our institutions to actually implement the recommendations of the report. Because this is not the report of the department, it's the report of the higher education family as a whole. We are working, as the CEO had indicated earlier, through the new infrastructure built. We will be building, of course, PIC, state-of-the-art residences. And I also want to appeal to the committee that as part of your oversight work, Chair, it should be impressed upon our students to care for these residences as well. Because in some instances, of course, it would be universities not playing their part, but in other instances, it would be our students who are not really taking care of their own residences. So we must appeal to them as we equally, even with the loans that are given to students, we must continuously appeal to them to value this financial assistance that government is actually providing. So that I think if we do that, it will eliminate this culture of students, having this money going to buy groceries or having people buying groceries and then they be reimbursed with some money. I think it would eliminate that. So we've got to continuously impress upon our students to play their part, because government is indeed playing their part. But I think from where we are sitting, Chair, I think NSFAS has done well. Sometimes setting targets is good. And I think the Auditor General indeed has dictated some of the challenges, but as part of the remedial steps that NSFAS is taking is to deal with some of those things. But I think in their own quest to try and have a fully functional system, they set targets which of course they could not meet. But I think with all that they are putting in place, would be talking a different story in 2017, because we'd be having a system that is quite viable that we are all impressed with. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity for NSFAS to come and present the annual report as per the mandate of Parliament. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, NEPCO. Because really, we sometimes when we ask this question, it's not to say that we just want to be hard on you. We are saying we are public representatives, so we have to do our oversight, and where there are issues, we have to pick them up, and together it's our responsibility to ensure that we achieve our goals. It's not that Chairperson, that hey, this committee. No, really, because the reality is that we are, when you talk about education, when you talk about learners, our students, we are talking about the future of this country, and it's something that really, that we cannot really compromise. I usually say to members here that we cannot politicize education, because without education, we are nowhere, really. So I think in future, those who will be here will still, because it's still our responsibility, even if we are not in Parliament, we'll still be there to monitor and ensure that as members of the public, we ensure that really we make sure that we achieve what we want to achieve, which is education, better life for our people. On that note, honourable members, I take this opportunity to say to you at the meeting's agenda.
Thank you.
I can only wish you good luck for the fifth Parliament.
You see us on the ground whether it's Parliament or not.
This is the last committee. No.
Yeah,
it's still done.